just pray with me real quick. Lord, I pray that over these next few moments that my words, God, just aren't my words. That they're yours, Lord. That you supersede, that you transcend, that you come into this environment. And Lord, through your Spirit, you impress onto our hearts what we need. So that we can leave this place, and as that song said, give praise to you, crucify ourselves, that we may live, God, for the things that you love, and live for the things that you want us to be about, Lord. Calibrate our lives this morning in a profound way. Amen. Hey, welcome to Church 180 this morning. My name is Tony. If you don't know who I am, I'm the lead pastor here. And we are wrapping up a sermon series that we've been in for the last like 10 weeks called Under the Sun. And we are looking at the book of Ecclesiastes, which is an ancient letter, about 3,000 years old to be precise, written by the third king of the ancient nation of Israel named Solomon. Okay, and what we've said throughout this entire series is that he uses this phrase, under the sun, 27 times. And in it, what he is describing as under the sun is your tangible life, okay? When I say your tangible life, what I mean is like the things that you preoccupy and fill your days with, the parenting that you do, the job that you work, the meals that you eat, the commitments that you make, the life that you live 24/7, like your sleep habits, everything is under the sun. It's your tangible life. And what he does is he writes this journal entry 3,000 years ago as a trillionaire, right? We've covered that. He's making lots of money, and he's taking inflation into consideration. He's a trillionaire, and he sets about withholding from himself nothing. So he seeks fulfillment in pleasure. He seeks fulfillment in achievement. He seeks fulfillment in wisdom. And what he ends up saying as a result of all that is that his tangible life, his life under the sun, the things that he has strived to find meaning in, the things he strived to find fulfillment in, that they are meaningless. That's what he says. And when he uses this word meaningless, he uses it 30 times in the book. And basically what he means is that it's brief, it's like a puff of smoke, it's like a puff of breath or an air, it's here today, gone tomorrow. And he continually reminds us of that. And what we've said is that, you know, you and I, like, we kind of live these little, like, lives where we're kind of on this hamster wheel, you know, that's what we've said week after week, where we think that we're going to find meaning in some of the things that he's pursued meaning in, right? That we look for meaning in the pleasure that we have, the things that we think will make us happy, as the song even said. We look for fulfillment and achievement and accomplishing things, which is great, but oftentimes falls short of what we're looking for. That we look for achievement and being the smart person or the wise person or, you know, whatever. And what we find out is that Solomon had the opportunity to chase after these things way harder than we ever could. And he finds out, hey, you know, there's not much to it at the end. It's brief. It's here today, gone tomorrow, and then we're gone. And that's what he continually reminds us of. And so we get to this portion that we're looking at today, and I've skirted around this for several weeks. And we just got to hit it head on today, because I think that it's you'll see where it's relevant, okay? Now, I've mentioned this time after time, but Solomon had 1,000 women, okay? That's right. 700 wives and 300 concubines. He had 1,000 women. And when we hear that in our culture, right, we think like Hugh Hefner, the Playboy Mansion, right? But like, what kind of harem does this guy have? Like, right? Like, I've mentioned this week after week after week and everything. But what I need you to understand as I bring this into light and I bring this into focus as we go into the final chapters, this is our final week, and we look at the culmination of his life, and it's almost as if he's looking back over his life. What I need you to get is that he had 1,000 women, but there was a reason with which he did. Because Solomon was wise. He was the wisest person who ever lived. God ordained that. And he's the wisest person who ever lived. And as part of governing this nation, as part of being the king, he wanted to establish peace, literally, in the Middle East. Okay? And so what he would do is he would establish these peace treaties with all of these surrounding nations so that he ushered in 40 years of peace in Israel. Absolute peace, absolute stillness, absolute calmness, no wars, no anything. And he initiated that through his wisdom. But in his wisdom, the way that he would establish this peace is he would establish a peace treaty with these neighboring nations. And to seal the treaty, a lot of times what these nations would do is give one of their ruler would give one of their daughters in marriage to Solomon as a result of that. So these marriages, it wasn't just like he was like, oh, I want 700 wives. It was like, no, I'm trying to establish peace in the world. And part of the indicator of some of that was to get another girl, another woman into the kingdom as a seal of that peace, right? And what we see in the narrative of Solomon is that God had warned him, okay, do not let these foreigners, these foreign women, turn your heart from me, turn your heart from the living God, because they have all kinds of different religions, all kinds of different worldviews, all kinds of different belief systems, all kinds of different ways with which they live their life. But Solomon, I have created this nation. This is God. I've created this nation from one person, from one family. And you are to be my mouthpiece to the world. And you are to follow me. And you are to be devoted to me, the one true living God. And what we see as a result of all of these wives, all of these women, all of these worldviews, all of this stuff that came into the kingdom, we see that Solomon turned his heart from God. It did not just worship God, but worshiped a plethora of many gods. Okay? And I think about that, and I just have to pause for a second, okay? Because isn't it ironic? Isn't it ironic that we, like, can be wise in the ways of the world, or we can be wise in our own eyes, and it just takes one thing to derail us in life, right? To get us off track. I think about this, okay, this. I'm a geek with the Apple Watch and closing my rings, okay? I just am. I've never mentioned this in church before, but I am. And I had 87 days in a row of closing my rings. That's the, right? Yes. And then I went to Montana and fly fished. And I did not close my rings Monday through Friday. And as a result of me getting off track for one day, it turned into five. Now I can't seem to close my rings ever, right? It got me off track and everything. And okay, I think about that. That's one example. Then you, come on, y'all. I'm sorry. We love the next generation here at Church 180. We just do. But I'm going to pick on you high schoolers for a second and then you 20-somethings for a second, because we've all seen, right, a high school kid or a 20-something-year-old kid finally get a girlfriend. Or a girlfriend get a boyfriend. And as a result of that one thing that changed, their whole, you don't see them anymore, right? They're gone, right? It's just like that one thing got their life completely off track. Okay, that's all fun and games and everything, but right, we've all been there. And it's funny when it's an Apple Watch, it's funny when it's a high school kid and their girlfriend, but we've all been there where a season, a commitment, a thing, a life altercation, something got us off course in life, and now all of a sudden, we're not on track anymore, right? And all of a sudden, we find ourselves in a place that we do not want to be, and this is where we see Solomon in the story. He's got 700 wives, 300 concubines. His heart turns away from the living God. And I say that to say this, okay, because what I'm about to say may not be true, but I would like it to be true. And many scholars of the Bible would like it to be true and believe it to be true, because we are going to enter into chapter 10, 11, and 12 in Ecclesiastes. And the thing that I would like to be true that may not be true is it almost seems as if Solomon is looking back on his life with regret and repentance. It's almost as though he's like, man, I had a good start, I made a good run, and then I don't know what happened here, But I'm reflecting in my later days and I'm regretting and repenting for what happened here. This is what it almost appears as. You'll see this as the letter unfolds. So without further ado, we're going to be in Ecclesiastes chapter 10. We're going to start in verse 1 today, and we're going to jump around in chapters 10 and 11 and 12. So chapter 10, verse 1, it says this. It says, as dead flies give perfume a bad smell, so a little folly outweighs wisdom and honor. It's kind of a weird example, right? I mean, in our day, like we buy our like little 30, 20, 40, whatever you feel like, we buy our little smell good stuff, right? And it's not that big a deal, but back in that day, like perfume was expensive. And Solomon gives the illustration, like just like a little fly gets caught in that perfume, and all of a sudden that expensive bottle of smell good stuff that you have here is disgusting because that one fly got in. You know, and it's almost as if Solomon's just starting this chapter, chapter 10, verse 1, and he's looking back over his life and he's like, man, it sucks that one mishap threw me off. That one, like, I turned away from God, and it's you feel it in there? Like, he's like, I put it this way, you don't have your note sheets. We didn't get those, but I put it this way. It's going to be on the screen. One small mishap tarnishes many years of building a good reputation, doesn't it? It just does. And I think this is something that takes a while to learn. Like, we don't get this in our teens and our 20s, but all of a sudden we start to realize that we can do so much good with our lives. And one mishap can pull the carpet out and throw everything off. And it's like Solomon looking at it, and he's like, man, I did so well. I started so well. And I took a misstep. And it threw the course of my life off as a result of that. We've seen that with politicians. We've seen that with church leaders. We've seen that with just people in positions of leadership, that all of a sudden they did so many good things, but whether it be a financial thing or a moral thing or an ethical thing or a found out thing, you know, something that was secret or whatever, that as a result of that misstep, everything is undone as a result of it. And it's like Solomon's seeing that right here. I mean, he goes on and he says, the heart of the wise inclines to the right. Now, back in that day, most people were right-handed, like most people now. And it's this idea that your right hand is strong. Your right hand, you know, is like capable, but your left hand's like, what do I do with this thing? And he says, the heart of the wise inclines to the right, but the heart of the fool to the left. Even as fools walk along the road, they lack sense and show everyone how stupid they are. I mean, he's just getting into this and letting us know that, you know, this life under the sun, this tangible life, can go off track like his has. And then he gets to verse 5 here, and it says this, and you've been here. He says, there is an evil that I have seen under the sun, the sort of error that arises from a ruler. Fools are put in many high positions while the rich occupy the low ones. I've seen slaves on horseback while princes go on foot like slaves. And then he keeps going in verses 8 through 10. He keeps going to give this second kind of little point that I think is helpful for us as we get to the very end of this letter. And it's this. He's just saying life, your tangible life, your life that you live under this sun is not going to be fair. Right? Like, it's not fair that one misstep can undo a million right things. But he's letting us know, like, guys, I've been wise. I've looked out over it. I've lived my life. And I'm recognizing that life under this sun is not fair, right? I think about this and, you know, like, I'm going to say what I'm about to say. And shut your mouth and shut your mind if you think I'm trying to be political. Okay, because I'm not trying to be political when I say what I'm about to say, but I was thinking about this morning and just kind of like praying over this message, and I was thinking like, I didn't choose to be born in Illinois, right? I didn't choose. Like, that was the chance of God that I was born in the Springfield, Illinois, to some Midwestern parents who happened to be white and live in a small town. Right, I didn't choose that. And I think about the world that we live in, and I think about the corruption that is happening, like worldwide, mass scale, that has happened over the centuries, over the decades that have happened. And I think about, like, you know, like you just have to look at history for a second to realize that there is corruption, there is unjust things that are happening, there's like chaos in the world, and there are people that are fleeing their countries, right? That they did not choose to be born in either. As a result of you get what I'm saying? Like, it's just, like, life is not fair. It isn't. And that's, like, super serious as we talk about things like that. But then I think about even, like, my children, right? And it's just, like, how many times, like Kelsey and I have to tell them every single day, well, life isn't fair, right? Like, it's just because they think that, like, parenting four kids to fairness is horrible. I would not wish that for anybody. And so I'm going to plug youth group right here for a second, but like I love our youth group right here. If you have a middle or high school kid, this is the place to be on Wednesday evenings. And my sixth grader will tell you that. She loves it. She adores it. And I've been taking her to youth group these past few weeks as we've gotten going again. And it has almost started World War III in our house. Because inevitably she will get home at 8:45 or 8:30, and the other ones have been put to bed. In meantime, you know, my 9 and 7-year-old are like, this is not fair. She's not even home yet. You're putting us to bed and singing our songs and whatever, praying, and this is stupid, Mom. And it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. She's 11. Shut it. You're 9. And, like, that's fair because of the age difference, but, honey, life isn't fair. And Solomon's looking back on his life, and he's looking back on where he's at, and he's like, man, I've seen a travesty. I've seen princes being treated like slaves. I've seen fools put into places of power and authority and position. And it's like he's saying, like, here, like, just life under the sun apart from eternity is not really fair. See, this is, the reason I say this is because Solomon's, he's concluding his letter, and he's kind of, like, so much of it, he's given us the tangibles of life, and it's almost as if he's making this shift, and he's saying, yes, life isn't fair, which is another check, another point that shows that our hearts were created for more than the unfairness of this planet, right? That our hearts, like that they yearn for that fairness, and it's almost like he's like, God will set the record straight for eternity on all the little injustices and all the little unfairness points in this life and right now. And so he does that, and then verses 2 through 15 point to the same conclusion that I want to share with you. He just talks about how it's all about people who choose to live their lives contrasting wisdom versus foolishness, purpose versus purposelessness, boredom versus meaning, and significance versus insignificance. And he says this, and you'll miss it if you blink and just blow past it, but he says in verse 15, the toil of fools wearies them. They do not know the way to town. And basically what I'm going to give you the point real quick on the screen, and then I'm going to try to unpack it and explain what he's trying to say. And this is like a culmination of all of 10, 11, and 12, or 10, yeah, 10, 11, and 12. And so the point is this, is that many people are fools who struggle to work with any sense of eternal direction. That's what he's saying. He's saying that many people are going back to, in this passage, he's saying many people, and we've talked about this week after week in this series, are on the hamster wheel of Southern California, right? That's our context. They're on the hamster wheel, meaning that I'm just spinning around the circle, and I think that if I please myself in this way, achieve this, accomplish this, and am wise and make good decisions and whatever, that I think that if I do this just around the corner, I'll be happy, fulfilled, and life will matter. And what he's saying is that the toil of fools wearies them because they don't even know the way to town. And so this is a metaphor, an example of, like, say you're on the outskirts of a big city and everything, like in the ancient days, and it's like, town's over there, but this idiot can't seem to find it, right? And it's like everybody knows which way town is because life happens in town. Goods happen in town. I have to go to town to make my life meet. But he's just saying, like, it's like this is a person that's an idiot because they can't find their way to the most obvious place in life that exists. And it's almost like as he starts to write with eternity in mind, he's saying, man, it's stupid to live this life as though this life is all that there is. And he's saying there's many fools who are going to live in this way that don't know where they're actually going in life. Okay, I'm going to overuse some illustrations today, okay? I'm just going to overuse it. So I've talked about this before, and then I have another illustration I'm going to use in a second that I've done before. So just bear with me. If you're new, great. If you've been around my preaching for a while, you're just like, shut up, Tony. Okay, so I read a book a while back that I love by Andy Stanley, a pastor in Georgia, called The Principle of the Path. And he uses an example that I've kind of like taken and made my own, but it's this idea of, okay, let's say that I'm at my house in Ocean View Hills off of exit 2 on the 805, and I tell you that tomorrow I have some appointments to do in Los Angeles, okay? And so, like, I go on my house, and I go down the hill, and I bypass the 805 north, and I go across there, and I hit the 805 south, and I head all the way to when I cross the border, and I'm all of a sudden in Tijuana. But I think that by being in Tijuana, I am actually on my way still to Los Angeles, right? Not going to get there, right? It's, if you want to go to Los Angeles, there is a direction to go to get to Los Angeles, right? And I think that what we see from the scriptures is so much guidance. It's like, I mean, this is be like the paper version of MapQuest, right? In some ways. But you have your phone now, the digital version, right? That you plug in your directions and your directions tell you where to go. And it's almost like what Solomon's trying to say is like, okay, here's the deal. Why do we think that we are going to end up with a meaningful, fulfilling, satisfying life by doing what everybody else does and ignoring this, ignoring the scriptures? I put it a few ways in my note sheet, like, right? It's ridiculous, but many people claim I want a great marriage without following any of the principles that lead to a great marriage, right? It's like so many people that I want a great family and I want to be around the table with my kid. Like, this is me, okay? I'm making fun of myself as I say this. Because it's like, I want to be, you know, with 4 kids, and I want them to have kids, and I want to have this big table, and all the grandkids come, you know, whatever. And it's like, if I want that to be a reality, there has to be an intimacy that I create with my children right now, which means I can't live my life like this, right? I can't live my life to just work, right? That I have to spend time with them and have a relationship with them if that is what I want, right? So many people want a great relationship with Jesus, yet do not prioritize any time in scripture or prayer, right? And it's like, man, there's a principle to the path. And if you want a great marriage, if you want a great family, if you want a great relationship with Jesus, if you want to make an impact for eternity with your life, there are things that you can do tomorrow, this afternoon, inspired from God's word to get there. Right? And oftentimes we're just like, nah, I know the way. Step aside. And then we go out, set about our lives, and we go about our lives, and we wonder why we're so lost on the day-to-day. And I mean, Solomon, he captures that. He says, man, like, life will wear you out. The toil of fools is wearisome. They don't know their way to town. And it's like Solomon's saying, like, y'all, we got a direction, and he's going to get here in a second. Let's get there, okay? And he goes on to say, okay, the next two verses speak into leadership. We're not going to read those, but he talks about nations being blessed with leaders who don't act like children, and then he gets to the section that we will look at before our final section. We're going to be chapter 10, verse 20. It says this. We're going to read all the way to verse 6 of chapter 11. It says, "Do not revel the king, even in your thoughts, or curse the rich in your bedroom. Because a bird in the sky may carry your words and a bird on the wing may report what you say. We're coming back to that in a minute. And then he says this. He says, ship your grain across the sea. After many days, you'll receive a return. Invest in 7 ventures, yes, in 8. You do not know what disaster may come upon the land. If clouds are full of water, they pour rain on the earth. Whether a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where it falls, there it will lie. Whoever watches the wind will not reap, and whoever looks at the clouds will not reap. Verses about being too analytical about life and being paralyzed, right? As you do not know the path of the wind or how the body is formed in a mother's womb, so you cannot understand the work of God, the maker of all things. So sow your seed in the morning and in evening, let your hands not be idle, for you do not know which will succeed, whether this or that, or whether both will do equally well. See, he kind of kicks this section off, okay? Verse 20. And he says, because a bird in the sky may carry your words and a bird on the wings may report what you say. And it's almost as if, you know, as the ruler, he's looking at the tangible and it's like, so many things get back to me. But as he starts to shift towards eternity, and as he starts to shift towards Creator God, and as he starts to shift towards these things, it's almost as if he's setting up what he's about to say with the final section. And what he's about to say with the final section, you know, in a birdie carrying off whatever you said against the king, it's almost as if what he's saying coming up to this final section is judgment day is coming. There will be a day that you stand before God and you're not going to talk your way out of anything. You're not going to lie your way out of anything. You will stand before God and he will know every thought you've ever had, every action you've ever taken, and everything you've ever done. And it's like a little birdie carried it off to him because he's God and he knows. And so Solomon's, you know, with eternity in mind, he's like, invest in a bunch of ventures. Keep eternity in mind. Go use and lead your life well because eternity in mind. Jesus would come in and reinforce this, right? He would come, like we just went through the parables all summer, and we talked about how every single parable, it literally was Jesus saying, go, this is how you go and bear fruit with your life. This is how you go and influence people around you. This is how you go and make an eternal impact. This is how you go and do these things. You live with it, like this parable, this principle, this story, you live with it in mind, and as a result of that, you are a person who bears fruit. As a result of that, it's almost like Solomon now is pointing back and he's saying, invest in your life. God sees what's going on. He sees every aspect of your life. Invest in your life into things that matter. I have a point for that I wrote down. Use your life well because your Creator will be the final judge of it, right? Use your life well. And then he gets to this next session that I want to look at and close with today that is super poetic. And this is kind of why I've said what I said to start the message. And he's reinforcing this point that we just made about God the Creator and God the Judger of our lives. And this is also the section that leads me and many scholars to believe that he's writing this as an old age as a sort of a reflection of repentance and regret. And see, he opens this section talking a lot about youthfulness, okay? And he's talking about, you know, kind of almost like looking back at being young. And I want to say this before I say this because we live in a society and a culture where we pretty much idealize 29 years old, right? There's been studies about this that are out there. Because 29 is that kind of that point in life where you start to know a few things, right? Sorry. I'm not trying to be that offensive. But your body hasn't, like, started hurting yet. Right? It's like the perfect age. Like, I remember I was reading something about that. And then I had the opportunity to tour BUDS, the Navy SEALs training. And that was where I learned that basically the cutoff was 28 because your body stops being able to recover from the workouts once you hit 29. So you had to get a special letter, you know. And I was like, oh, that kind of reinforces the article I just read and kind of reinforces so much of our culture and so much of what we do, right? You know, like I'm 39 now. And so I'm 10 years removed from this, which means I need to find some serums to put on my face, right? Which means I need to wake up and I need to do a HIIT workout in the garage so that my body gets moving. Which means that later on in the day, I probably should do some yoga, right? Because I'm not as flexible as I used to be. And we live in a culture that idealizes youth and youthfulness and spends a ton of money and energy and investments on retaining 29 in so many ways. And it's like Solomon is looking back at 29 to whatever kind of mess he made in the middle to like this current moment that he's in. Looking back over his life, and he writes these verses that are, I mean, they kind of gave me chills whenever I read them. Because he's looking at all of life. It's like Benjamin Button, right? He's like looking at all of life in one swath here. And so he says this, let's just read it. He says, light is sweet, and it pleases the eyes to see the sun. And see, this idea of light is youthfulness here. It's being young. It says, light is sweet, and it is pleases the eyes to see the sun. However many years anyone may live, let them enjoy them all. But let them remember the days of darkness, for there will be many. Because everything to come is meaningless. Right? And he's saying, man, our time on earth is so brief, but the time to come outside of our time on earth is a lot longer than our time on earth. Right? That's what he's talking about with the days of darkness. And you will be gone from this planet a lot more than you are here on this planet. And he's reminding us of that. He says, you who are young, be happy while you're young. And let your heart give you joy in the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart and whatever your eyes see. But know that for all of these things, God will bring you into judgment. That's what he says. And then I love how he follows it up with verse 10. He says, so then banish anxiety from your hearts. God's going to judge you. So stop being so anxious. And it's almost like this is the way I read it, okay? So you're getting my conjecture here. But we worry about so much, right? We worry about being accepted, and we worry about insecurities, and we worry about, are they going to think this about me? And it's almost like Solomon's like, hold on a second. Let's shrink the concern and the care into one camp, God. He's going to judge you. And so stop being anxious about all the other stuff, because like your singular focus is that someday you will live your life and stand before the creator of your life and be judged by him. So banish anxiety from your heart and cast off the troubles of your body, for youth and vigor are meaningless. Then he says this, remember your creator in the days of your youth before the days of trouble come and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them. Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars grow dark and the clouds return after the rain. And then he starts to get graphic with our actual bodies here. He says, when the keepers of the house tremble, it's our arms. When the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men stoop, that's our legs. And they start to give out. When the grinders, that's our teeth, right? When the grinders cease because they are few and those looking through the windows grow dim, when your teeth start to fall out, when your teeth start to be used up, when your eyes start to not be able to see as well anymore, and some of us were in here and we're like, this is going to be forever from now. I'm like, no, it's not. It's like tomorrow. Right? When the doors to the street are closed and the sound of grinding fades, that's when our hearing starts to go out. When the people rise up at the sound of birds, but all the bird songs start to grow faint. When people are afraid of heights and the dangers in the streets, when the almond tree blossoms, that's just gray hair. And the grasshopper drags itself along and desire no longer is stirred. That's vigor and passion for life that is lost. Then people go to their eternal home and mourners go about in the streets. That's the way it works, right? People die, and people who are left are sad at their lack of presence anymore. Then he says, verse 6, remember him before the silver cord is severed and the golden bowl is broken, before the pitcher is shattered at the spring and the wheel broken at the well, and dust returns to the ground it came from, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. And then he closes this little section of the letter the same way that he opened it. He says, meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Everything is meaningless. So he closes the same way, just saying, guys, so much of the crap that we worry about, so much in this life doesn't matter. And I think it's good for us to remember that. I'm not saying go out and meaningless, meaningless, I'm not going to work tomorrow. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is, Solomon is trying to help you get the right perspective about the work that you do tomorrow, right? This is why Paul, and we've mentioned this before, but this is like Paul reiterates what Solomon says, and he says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might as though you're working for God, not for people, right? That's why he says that. So it's a reframe. It's a different, it's a shift in perspective to say, my work isn't all there is, but my work does matter. My parenting isn't all that there is, but it matters. My marriage isn't all that there is, but man, it matters. And it's a reframing to say, put your whole life, like even as your legs start to sag and your hands start to shake and your eyes start to not be able to see well anymore and your hearing goes out, as all this starts to happen and the body ages over time, remember God and remember that with him and with eternity in mind and that perspective, it all actually matters. But if you're just living to be young and you're just living to make a paycheck and work and just living to raise good citizens or whatever we say, it doesn't matter. It's meaningless. There's no point. That's what he says. Then he gets into these final words. I don't know what's going to be on the screen, but I'm going to go back a little bit. Verse 11 says, the words of the wise are like goads, their collected sayings like firmly embedded nails given by one shepherd. Be warned, my son, of adding anything, of anything in addition to them. And then he says this, of making many books there's no end, and much study wearies the body. Where's my students at in here? Just tell your parents that. Like, this is a good verse to memorize, right, before exams. My body's wearied from all this study. And then he says this, verse 13 and 14. I love it. Now all has been heard. Here's the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. And the letter's over. See, we read that in our culture. We have a difficult relationship with hearing the words, fear God and keep his commands, don't we? It's a messy relationship. It's been abused over the years. It's something that we just are like, well, I shouldn't have to fear God. I should just revere him, right? Like, isn't God just the God of love? Yes, all that, yeah. And the best way that I can describe it is that, you know, I've used this example before as well, but it's like when you go get into the ocean, it is refreshing, life-giving, beautiful, tranquil, transcendent, and scary. Because at any given moment, the ocean can have its way, not only with me, but with big old ships, right? Because of the power that it has. And it's like Solomon saying, like, shrink it all back. You don't have to have anxiety about all of life because you only need to be anxious about one thing, and that is your life laid bare before your creator, right? That's it. And he's saying, so the conclusion of the matter is fear God, keep his commands, live your life. I wrote it this way for your note sheet. Or you don't have one, sorry. But use your life to live boldly, right? This is almost what Solomon's saying. Live boldly. Don't be a coward, right? You are judged to one audience. Or you are being judged by one audience. Use your life to live boldly. And in that, find joy and follow God. The conclusion of the matter, live boldly, find joy, follow God, right? And see, this is the illustration that I've overused, right? And I have to do it. And I have an illustration at home, but this morning I was like, you know what? I'm gonna plug our incredible, amazing setup teardown team here at Church 180 that kills it every single week in here at 7:30 a.m. knocking this out. And I stole one of their extension cords. Because I've used this example before a lot, but it's like Solomon's saying with this text that your life is brief. It's very brief. Almost like just this little strip of yellow. And what you do, how you live, the boldness that you have, the obedience that you have, the commands that you follow, the life that you live here, okay? Right here in this little yellow strip. It actually matters for all of this. This is eternity, right? And this isn't even a good representation. It's even longer. And so oftentimes we get so preoccupied with this. You know, we live as though this is all that matters, and the acceptance of different people, or the accumulation of certain experiences, or the accumulation of certain goods, or the achievements, that you know what I mean? And we live as though this is all that there is. And what Solomon's saying here is you can't even find your way to town, you idiot. Live here for all of that. Live here for all of eternity. This is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God, keep his commands. If you fear God and you keep his commands, you will live in this little yellow strip in a way that is profound and matters for all of eternity. That's what he's saying. And I think that it's just good for us to hear. Sobering for us to hear. Helpful for us to hear. And so my prayer is that as we leave this place and we leave this series and we go on to the Sermon on the Mount, which is where we're going next. We do Serve Day next week. My prayer is that this moment in time for those of us gathered here today, online, in person, whatever, we can be men and women who live our lives under the sun right here. But realize that the meaning is living this life right here for all of this here. And that we would find that as it appears that Solomon did. And that Jesus would go and reinforce himself. Because Jesus, you know, we're going to go into a time of communion. And Jesus said it this way. He said, for whoever wishes to save their lives will lose it. But whoever loses their life for my sake will find it, right? And I think that's Jesus reinforcing everything that Solomon said in Ecclesiastes and saying, hey, lose your life for my sake. You'll find it. Use it. And so we're going to sing this final song in the conclusion of this series, and we're going to take communion like we do every single week. And communion is this time in the service where we remember Jesus losing his life for our sake and giving us the opportunity to lose our life in a different way to find it. See, he on a cross had his body broken, which is what's representative of the cracker that's on the table, and his blood poured out, which is representative of the juice which is on the table, so that you and I could have forgiveness, a right relationship with God the Father. We could be forgiven, and we can live lives of meaning and lives of hope. And so I'm going to pray for this time, and anytime during this last song that we sing, you are free to get up and grab communion and take that with us. Jesus, thank you so much for your word. And may it truly, God, not just be something that we look to at this moment and then go about our Sundays and Mondays and Tuesdays and forget, but God, may it be something that stamps its way into our hearts, into our lives, and it affects the way that we live this afternoon. It affects the way that we